Anyway, this song is called Sorrow. Let me take you to the hurting ground, where all good men are trampled down, just to settle up a bet that could not be won, between a prideful father and his son. Won't you guide me now, for I can see a reason for the suffering and this long misery. What if every living soul could be upright and strong? Well, then I do imagine there will be sorrow, and there will be sorrow, and there will be sorrow no more. When all soldiers lay their weapons down, or when all kings and queens relinquish the crown, or when the only true Messiah rescues us from ourselves, it's easy to imagine there will be sorrow, and there will be sorrow, and there will be sorrow no more, no more. Sorrow, and there will be sorrow, and there will be sorrow no more, and there will be sorrow, and there will be sorrow, and there will be sorrow no more. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, that's all we got for you tonight. But I think now we can, are we going to open it up to some questions? Or do you have something else planned?
Yeah, we're going to open it up now to questions and answers. So if you're interested in asking a question, you can come down to this microphone right here.
I just want to say, if I'm going to stand here, I got to put my jacket back on.
So feel free.
All right, great. Okay, I'm going to sit down.
Yeah, so you can stand. I don't have the soapbox anymore. You can stand up with the front mic up there. I ask that you limit your questions to a short interrogative statement followed by a question mark. So, if you wish to ask a question, come to the
front
mic.
Dan, I'm just gonna start by making a comment, and then we'll get to the questions.
Isn't that intimidating to make people walk up to ask a question?
It could be. It could
very
well
be. You know, Phil Donahue used to walk all over his audience with a microphone, leading the way.
Well, we'll give people just a minute to get over their intimidation. I mean, I wanted to engage with you a little bit, Greg, with your humanism earlier, because, again, I mean, humanism is this sort of world tradition, right? And you and I had this first conversation. We met over dinner a few weeks ago, and we talked, and it was this sort of sense of, well, what sense do you mean humanism in? Because you have the one song, Materialist, where this is from the album Process of Belief, which is one of my favorite albums, where you do sort of say, you know, I ain't no deist, I'm a realist, I'm a naturalist. Well, you don't use actually the word naturalist in that song, although you do in your book and et cetera, but, you know, call me a humanist at one point, you say. And then you sort of gave an introduction to humanism in the sort of pre-modern and like just leading up to the modern sense. And then we talked about how the fact that, you know, humanism is this sort of modern organized movement too that, you know, that brought you here. And so I just, you know, I just wanted to sort of get a sense from you, you know, has it been strange to kind of become engaged with not just the sort of, you know, the movement of humanism as you were talking about from sort of ancient times through the present, but this sort of modern group of people that are sort of engaged in this process of, you know, Berlin is kind of, you know, you guys are sort of our equivalent of the, I mean, you know, what's your thoughts on sort of engaging with this modern movement of humanism that we've kind of brought you?
I got to say that, you know, before you came along, there was Preston Jones, who you mm-hmm. mentioned earlier, who we co-wrote that book together. And Preston Jones is not, he's a humanist and a great guy and a great person, but he's not from the godless sect. Mm-hmm. And he thinks it's just a matter of time until I do find God. And that's why he was so pleased to hear this was happening in a church. So I see it, I see it as I have a very pluralistic. Multiplicitous view of the world, and I think that from what I understand about it, humanism has had so many different strains through the years that any time a group is willing to honor, I'm going to do my best to honor them, and the following that has we have a tremendous that has. Really opened our eyes a little bit, and I think helps us to be more tolerant. Although, as you said, we've never pointed out in any of our songs any kind of hatred or disgust for any group. We've always maintained that everyone who's willing to try and make the world a better place should be honored. So, but your group here has taught me that. What I really appreciate is that humanism, in a secular sense, which is really something that most scientists belong to, I feel very comfortable and at home in this kind of a setting. So, I appreciate it.
This is a question about labels. Ceding to you the label of most important evolutionary biologist in the world. The second most important might indeed be Richard Dawkins, an atheist who calls himself an atheist. Chaplain Epstein is an atheist who calls himself a humanist. Do you use a label?
Well, I try not to bill myself as an atheist because I don't think it says that much, personally. I think I'm not that interested whether or not you are a believer in God. I think I bill myself more as a naturalist because I think naturalism says something. It says that I can agree with you on how to find the truth. And how to find the truth is through a process of observation, experiment, and verification. And if you can verify what I've observed, then we can call it true. And that pretty much excludes people who are traditionally religious because they say to me, I experience God and I don't have to prove it to you. And well, I can say I experience a lot of things too, but I don't know if it's the same as what you're experiencing. So to me, saying you're a naturalist says something much more than I'm an atheist. It says I do subscribe to the null hypothesis that no gods exist, and yet if there was ever any evidence, I'd be the first one in line to acknowledge the existence of God. But this idea that naturalism can form a common ground by which we can find truth is something that's very important to me.
You spoke a little bit about the crossover between your career as a musician and your career as an academic. And I was curious as to what impact your career as a musician and also a punk rock musician at that, but how has that impacted the respective fellow colleagues? And if so, do you care at all about how your career do they take you less or more seriously because of your influential role in punk rock and music in general?
In other words, are you asking me if my credibility is questioned?
That's a good word, credibility. Yeah.
I'd like to answer this on the podium. All right. With this eagle in front of me, who could question my credibility? In black and white photos I've seen, this eagle scares the hell out of me. That thing. Anyway, my credibility has been questioned left and right, and that's just part of being even a minor public figure. That's all there is questioning someone's credibility. Now, if you're a minor public figure in science, and you get the least little bit of publicity, you are opening yourself up even to more questioning and often ridicule fueled by jealousy. And in music, it's the same thing. If you get the slightest bit of success, you are automatically a target. And it's just my hypothesis that it's jealousy, but once they figure out a way to test that, I think I'll be verified. It'll be verified. So, yes, I recognize that if I ever write a treatise in biology, something that very much interests me, it will be scoffed at by the scientists. If I dare to step out of punk rock and do a folk album, which I've done, it will be scoffed at. But that's not in the spirit of what I believe in, so I don't let it bother me. But yeah, it's harder to, I doubt if I can ever reach the kind of status within any one field that some of the great leaders in those fields have attained. As I said, I'm a pluralist. Thanks for the question. Maybe I should put my jacket on. No, I'll be all right. The podium is fine without it.
Back in 2004, you were involved with the punk voter group in the Rock Against Bush CDs. I was wondering if that was going to continue this year with the election, and on a related note, how you felt about all the emphasis being placed on candidates' religions.
Well, this year we're doing a Rock Against Obama. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. That Rock Against Bush campaign was really orchestrated by Mike at Fat Records, and that was, we are friends from way back. We donated a song to the CD. We made an entire album in 2003 that was dedicated to our position statement on the Bush administration. And so we didn't feel like we had to go on with that. You know, as a piece of poetry, it got really tedious and tiring just to talk about the war, and it was so obviously the wrong decision in the wrong direction. So we gave up on that by 2004 and moved on to more interesting things. And the second part of your question was, about emphasis on religion and the candidates?
Yes.
Well, it hasn't. That's not really the headlines that I've been focusing on. I mean, I don't, you know, when people talk about other people's religion, and they try to make a story out of it, it's really boring to me. It just, I'd rather know how, whether they, you know, are interested in balancing our budget or getting us out of Iraq. Those are the things that are more important to me. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Hi. I feel like that you've accomplished a lot in your life, and I was wondering what you think your biggest accomplishment was.
My biggest accomplishment is hopefully yet to come. Yeah, I guess I should comment on this being my lifetime achievement award. I mean, next week I'll be announcing my retirement from... I think in the sense that I've been at least consistent with academia and music for 27 years, which is a longer career than a lot of people have. I guess that's what got me in the door for the lifetime achievement. But I really hope that I'm 43 years old, and I hope that in the next 20 years I can do bigger and better things. I mean, I really want to write this book that I've been thinking about for a couple years. It might not be for five more years before I can formulate it, but I want to write a book. I want to do more in music, and there's a lot of things left to come. And I guess the things that most people see as great achievements in my life, I tend to downplay, because they don't see the things that are really close to my heart, which are things like my children and my family and the things that are very private. And so I couldn't even measure that against the work that I've done. But I think that in terms of works, I'm very happy that I've written over 180 songs in my life, and that I've, you know, I'm happy that I accomplished what I did in academia, and those things are behind me now, and there's more to do, so I'm always looking forward. Thank you.
You're known for putting moral messages in your lyrics. I was wondering if you think that there are any moral teachings that you could learn from religion that you cannot learn from just observations.
Well, first of all, I have a theory on morals that has nothing to do with religion, and it's probably not my theory. I probably read it from somebody. But the idea that morals can even come from a religion is kind of offensive to me, because I think morals come from your parents, basically, and morals come from whoever your immediate social surroundings are for the first 5 or 7 years of your life. And so if you do detect some of that in my songwriting, you can just thank the guy standing to your left, because it must have come from something that I wasn't even aware of in the first 5 years of my life. But I honestly try not to write about morals in the songs, because I think they are oftentimes easily criticized, and it's something that I'm not sure. A song to me has never been a soapbox or a pulpit kind of thing. I've never wanted to tell people how they should live their lives or what I think is good, or what I think is the right way. In fact, I think I wrote a song. I've written many songs, actually, that say, you'll get no direction from me. There's another song called The Answer that says, don't tell me about the answer, because another one will come along soon. So I think I've always tried to steer clear of telling people what they should do. But I do believe in asking the right questions. And the right questions are hopefully to improve things a little bit. And those improvements are based solely on my own moral background, so it's biased. Thank you. I gotta get a drink. Okay.
A couple of years ago, I'm not sure which year it was, you did an essay called A Punk Manifesto, and you said that punk was the personal expression of uniqueness that came up with being in touch with our human ability to reason and ask questions. And I'm just curious what the difference between that and humanism is, at least in your eyes, because it seems to be fairly similar.
Yeah, well, that came at a time before I really did a lot of research on in anything. That was, probably a good 10 years ago now. I did a lot of research in paleontology, but I hadn't done much in terms of thinking about religion and morals and whatnot. And so I was trying to define punk, which is like, again, I stepped outside the norm and was highly criticized for it. But I just thought, at that point, punk was almost 20 years old. And I thought, what are we all calling ourselves for punk for if we don't really know what the hell it means? So I tried to give it some shape, some definition. And it had, depending on who you talk to, it had either failed miserably or had some success. But I think you're right. That was kind of a humanist statement that I made, and it basically said that punk is a part of being human. It's our natural inclination to question things and to try and improve them. And that's pretty much a common theme in humanism as well.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi. I know you're a humanist now, but were you always kind of like a non-theist, I guess I would call it? Or was there like a point in your life when you were when you realized you didn't believe what other people, like religious people, believe?
Well, I was very fortunate in never having to attend a church ceremony in my life. So, that was good in one respect. It was also bad in another respect. Man, I had to figure it out for myself, because I think in church you learn a lot of stuff about where you come from, and regardless of its accuracy. But you, at least as a kid, you're taught that stuff, and you learn, you don't have to figure it out. But the big questions in life are answered, I think, in Sunday school. And I didn't go to Sunday school. I didn't start understanding the bigger questions until late in high school, actually. And when I started studying more natural science, things started to make sense to me. So, it wasn't like an automatic awakening where I said, everything I've learned up to this point is BS, and now I'm something else. It was a slow coming to this position that I'm at right now, and it will probably evolve further, but I don't think it'll evolve towards a more theistic worldview.
And I don't know if I'm allowed to ask a second question, but do you
get to the back of the line.
Really quick, do you have any advice for songwriters who, all of your songs that I've heard are really, they have really good lyrics, so.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know if you have any songwriting advice.
My advice for songwriters is be prolific, because it really is a process. It's not just it's not something that you can finish and put away. Every song you write is just a path towards, it's a step on the path towards writing a better song. So the main thing I would say is be dedicated to it, and don't be satisfied with your last work, and don't ever listen to what other people say about your song. That's probably the most important thing. Thank you.
So a question that's commonly addressed to atheists, agnostics, and humanists is, what if you're wrong and you get up to heaven and God's standing there and he asks you, what were you doing this whole time?
Is that really a common question?
Oh, you have no idea.
Really?
I'm at the divinity school. It gets asked a lot.
Listen, I am so confident in my answer. I can't believe that people are flustered by the... I'd like to hear some of the answers, but mine is very simple. If that happens and I'm... standing before God and he looks at me and thinks I'm a bad person, then he's got to be out of his mind. Because I'm overly... Now, I know that goes against biblical teaching. That might border on hubris, but I'm pretty sure that I'm not one of those who should go to hell. And, you know, as they say, if I am, then I'll see all my friends down there. So, all right. Thank you.
I'm sure you're familiar with the term popular atheism, but for the sake of my question, I'd like to restrict the definition. Popular atheism is commonly referred to as world views, beliefs, behaviors, and for this question specifically, media associated with the stereotypical atheist. And I was wondering, would you be so kind to share your opinion on popular atheism in that sense?
Well, I am not even modestly or moderately attracted to the idea of popularizing atheism. I would never hold it against someone who is, because it's become a viable way to sell books. It's become a viable way to get on television, and it's become a viable industry. And I don't go around criticizing people for doing what they think, you know, can earn them a living. So in that sense, I don't criticize it, but I will say I'm not at all attracted to it. I've had opportunities and I've deflected them, because I just don't think that if it becomes a media storm, or if it becomes a popular thing because it's in all the books and in all the magazines and on television, I don't think people will focus on the substantial part of it as much, and I think it'll become a flash in the pan. And I think a lot of these issues are actually very important, and they need to be carefully expressed. I guess I'm just distrustful that when things are blown out of proportion by the media, they lose their substance. They lose their substance, and they aren't as carefully studied anymore. So maybe it's an unfair paranoia of mine. But
may I push my question slightly further? How about specifically Bad Religion songs becoming a tenet of popular atheism?
Well, if churches all over the country decide to start playing Bad Religion songs, I'd be very happy. So, thank you.
Hi, Greg.
Hello.
I've been listening to your songs for a long time now, hearing the lyrics, reading the lyrics, and fortunately for me, not being a brilliant lyrical analyst, a lot of them have very straightforward messages. But there's one song in particular I've been wondering about for many years, and I just got to ask you, what is the generator?
It's a title track of an album. That's
yeah, I got that much.
And I've got to say that Brett wrote that song, and... But since he and I can always deflect that, but since Brett and I talk about every song, since I'm the one who gives it the voice, your question is still valid. I can't just pass it off on Brett and have him answer it. The generator is I guess you could call it the unmoved mover. And it could be thought of as the God particle. Or it could be thought of as the Big Bang. It's an artistic expression that talks about what got things started.
So kind of the force behind the universe?
You could say that, yes.
Or God?
Well, if that's your definition of God, then that's great.
I don't have a definition. I don't try to act like I know what God is.
A lot of the songs, Brett will not shy away from talking about God, and he's an atheist in the sense that he doesn't think there's a God in the world or in the universe that does anything.
Up in the clouds watching everything.
There's not a God that answers your prayers. And yet he still wants to believe there is something bigger out there. And I've grown very tolerant of those kind of suggestions. However, I think he's absolutely crazy for thinking it.
Thanks, Rick.
How you doing?
Hello.
So basically, I'm seeking advice. I'm a musician as well, and I think it's really interesting. It's wonderfully interesting how different your concept of music is than mine. Like I focus more on harmonies and intricate, musical concepts, and you focus on lyrics and philosophical concepts, and I'm sort of the same way. I feel I have that too, but I have trouble letting go of my art. Basically, it's never good enough, and you're okay with playing, simple stuff as long as it gets the message across. So I'm wondering how you find that line.
Well, part of me isn't okay with, like I told the woman before, you can't ever be satisfied when you write a song, no matter how well articulated it is. It's just, to me, it's a process. It's a step in the direction of your next song.
You still focus more on conceptual aspects of it, correct? Like, I mean, more than the chords that you play, or is it the same thing? You're satisfied more with one than the other sometimes, or?
Well, I think that my acknowledgement that it's all a process, and my acknowledgement that people will interpret it the way they want says that you can never control how it's interpreted, how it's and so playing an acoustic stripped down version of something is still going to be interpreted by each person individually, and I think that's an acknowledgement that there's no perfection in it in that sense. And also, by the way, we've always been very interested in harmonies. It's something that we take very seriously. So the sound of the music is very important to us as well.
Thanks.
Thank you. Last question.
No, sorry, last guy in line for the last question. So we'll just have everyone who's
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6 is our last question. Okay, 6 more questions.
Hello.
Hi.
I had the opportunity to speak with Greg Epstein earlier today, and he asked me what it was about the music of Bad Religion that was meaningful to me. And what I said was that music, until discovering Bad Religion, was never a part of my life. I never really had any appreciation for it, for exactly the reason you spoke about the conflation of entertainment and education. And all the music I'd encountered up until Bad Religion was just completely frivolous in my mind and sort of useless to me. And given that Bad Religion is literally the only music I listen to, could you recommend any other music that might satisfy those criteria that I might be able to appreciate?
No, I cannot. I'm just joking. I mean, I've always been inspired by the bands and artists who have a large catalog of music and have spanned decades. It's an interesting thing that a lot of them are not the most famous, but Frank Zappa comes to mind. And there's these are things that, I mean, artists, you can spend your entire life learning about, and you can, there's no end almost to the amount of music you can discover among them. So you could spend some time with Frank Zappa. Todd Rundgren's another one. But, you know, I would say in terms of contemporaries, there's a huge amount of interesting punk music that has evolved over the last 20 years. Punk isn't just the Ramones, but you really should know about the Ramones, because they're and you really should and the best thing is there are all kinds of catalogs and compendiums now that have regional lists of regional bands and regional flavors of punk that I think are many of them are compilations that have come out from those labels. And I would also say one of my favorite styles of music to explore is old-time music, old-time particularly from North America, just because, again, the catalogs are so rich, and the amount of recorded music now available is immense. Good luck. Thank you.
Tonight you played Cease, which has been one of my favorite songs since middle school, and I just wanted to have some insight into that song, what personal experiences helped inspire the lyrics.
Well, that you know, it wasn't an inspiration, really. That I just want to dispel a myth real quick that songs are inspired by a moment in life. Sometimes that's true, but in the case of that tune, it wasn't. I started writing the first verse. The first verse talks about blacktop spreading endlessly, like a chemical reaction. And that was because it's really boring that I'm going to reveal this to you. But that's just because they were cutting down a lot of trees in our neighborhood and expanding this housing development. And we have this beautiful, pristine forest in the back of our property that is labeled for destruction. And at the time that that album came out, they decided to expand the neighborhood. And that's what got me. So the first verse talks about environmental destruction and the end of ecosystems, basically. Then I thought, let's build on this. What are other things that cease? And the second verse is about social movements that have come and gone. And then the third verse is about family and interpersonal relationships. And it just so happens that was at a time when I was getting a divorce. And it's, like I said, it's boring to reveal those facts, but the song itself has, you're not alone. A lot of people tell me it's their favorite song. And I think when you put all that together and express it in a particular way, it can be more than just what inspired each verse. It can give you some emotion that wasn't there when I was actually writing the song. So thank you for liking the song. Hello.
First of all, congratulations for the award. And my question is, you've been part of the punk scene since the 80s, and during this whole time you delivered great music, but you managed to do great things and even achieving this award. So based on your life experience, based on your experience, what would you like to say to the kids who are currently adopting a certain kind of lifestyle just based on the music they like, and they feel they have to do so because otherwise they'd be called either posers or fake on this count?
Yeah, it's very tough to be involved in something. You know, what you just brought up is one of the things that irritate me the most about modern society, and that is reality television. One of the I mean, reality, especially as it's expressed on those shows, is so boring. Why do we want... But anyway, one of the big criticisms on those shows, and I am an expert at them because I have two teenagers at home, and I've been exposed to a lot of them, but what is the worst criticism that you hear over and over again on any reality television? You're being fake. You're not real. You know, that's what they want you to believe, that reality television, you're supposed to be real. Well, we, of course, growing up in the punk scene, have dealt with that for a long time because you had to be a real punk. You know, the worst thing you could be called is a poser. And to be a real punk, you either have to, like, smash a car window or get, you know, inject heroin or do something that's extreme, or else you'll be called fake. And my advice is, I can only tell you how I avoided it, and it just it made me see human nature a little more blatantly, and I realized that people are really frail, and in order to get over my own feelings of insufficiency, I had to get angry at people who would criticize my authenticity. So I'm not saying that's the best thing. You know, it probably drove a lot of friends away and may have made me difficult to live with. But what it does do, at least, is it allows you to love yourself. And that's probably the most important thing I would tell people who are struggling with that.
Very much.
Thank you.
Hello, it's a pleasure.
Thank you.
I have a question of personal interest, and I'll try to include something that's relevant to our conversation tonight. But I'm an artist, and as an artist, I like to let the artwork speak for itself. And for the most part, the artwork that accompanies the Bad Religion albums, I can interpret. However, I'm curious on the process of belief. I once met Mr. J. Bentley, and he told me that was a Tesla coil on there, and I had to know because I actually got it tattooed on my arm. So I'm curious. So it's on there. I'm curious about the choice of that image and why that image, and also to accompany that, about your interpretation of what the phrase, the process of belief, means to you.
I'm going to just break your heart, and I might have to take you out for a beer after this, because you got to understand that the artwork that goes on the album comes from an art department. So if that's a Tesla coil,
that's what Jay Bentley tells me. I hope it's true.
I know. He probably knew something that I didn't, because he talked to the artist, but and he might be right about that. But
I researched it.
But the reason, the reason that it was on there is because the process of belief, we used it as a title track. It came from something that I wrote that said, you probably know this already, the process of belief is an elixir when we're weak. I must confess, at times I indulge on the sneak, but generally my outlook's not so bleak. That really struck Brett, those words, and he actually chose that as the title. And then I think what was interesting about it, that's also the album that has Sorrow on it, and which expresses a real humanistic outlook on life. And I think at that point we were trying to, there was actually our first attempt to meld science and humanism in a more in our more mature stages. I think we'd come a long way by that time. It was only two albums ago, and we were better able to put that into words, and we weren't afraid to talk about faith, which is something we had hardly mentioned in our entire catalog of, up to that time, 12 albums. So I guess you could look at it as I mean, your tattoo probably looks cool, so you've got that going for you. And it also, and I think what it does is it allows you to say that it was a time when we were addressing science and faith, which is a theme in my life, at least.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. I was wondering if you could comment on Ben Stein's recent movie, Expelled.
I was wondering if I'd get a question about that.
And
did you see it?
No, I just saw the trailer on YouTube. And do you think there are any intellectually honest scientists who advocate intelligent design?
You mean like Michael Bayer?
For example.
I just don't want to badmouth anyone, so let's not talk about Michael Bayer. So. And as for Expelled, my advisor, Will Provine, is one of the stars of the movie, or as they told him he was going to be. And I just want to clear for the record, he was bamboozled, as was Richard Dawkins. Okay, these are some of the most giving scientists. They will give their time to someone who wants to do an interview. But when someone comes and says, will you talk to us for 2 hours? We're making a movie that wants to balance both sides of the story. And then they don't reveal that they really are intelligent design advocates. I think there's nothing more that needs to be said. You can bill it as a documentary if you want, but it's a dishonest piece of junk. And, you know, this guy, Ben Stein, I mean, let's talk about Ben Stein. The guy does some game show for a while, you know, win Ben Stein's money, a mediocre at best game show. Then he disappears for 10 years. The next time I see him, he's on Fox News and CNN saying, let's not be angry at the gas companies. Let's not get angry at the oil companies, people. It's not their fault, you know, that we're in this predicament. They're just doing what anyone would do. So the point is, Ben Stein is another one we can question as to his motives. And when I found out this movie, it's called Expelled. I urge none of you to see it. Once we hear, oh, by the way, it means, you know, that intelligent design has been expelled from the science class. Oh, this is a tragedy in America. Yeah, and the gas companies are really good, you know, the oil companies are really good people. This is the guy who produced this movie. So anyway, I'm sorry I got emotional. So the only place I've really heard about it is from my advisor urging me to look on the web, and he had all these disclaimers to say about it. He feels terrible because he was bamboozled. They offered him cash, and he said, no, thank you. You know, he gives interviews because he's interested in teaching. And they bamboozled him and Dawkins into looking like buffoons in front of the ID movement. So, and another thing, he said, I'll sue you if, you know, I didn't ask you to pay me, but I will sue you if you don't put a disclaimer in this movie, after he found out who was behind it. Because in every one of his evolution classes, Will Provine invites people from all faiths. And he invites intelligent design people to share their side of the discussion, not to belittle them, but to give them a forum and to allow them to interact with the students at Cornell. So he was really unfairly portrayed in that movie, and I'm sorry that I got emotional. Was there a second part to your question?
Yeah, the scientists who do advocate ID and who do get professorships, like, what's up with that?
Okay.
Are they motivated by religion or something else? I mean, if they are scientists.
I really don't mind if someone believes that the universe is intelligently designed. That's fine. But don't try to use it don't try to insinuate it into the science curriculum. And that's the only thing. And so that's why I think those scientists are easily questioned. We can question their motives. I think they're trying to revolutionize science. And what they're doing is just making a lot of scientists angry. And because it's not what I said earlier, it's not based on observation, verification, and discovery. It's based on some really convoluted reasoning and a language that most of us can't understand.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hello.
First, I'd like to thank you for my past vocabulary test that I've passed because of Bad Religion songs. And also, I'd really like to ask you about one of your songs and what exactly it means. I was wondering about Beyond Electric Dreams, because most of your songs are very straightforward, and this one seems to have nothing to do with anything. So.
A little known fact that will now be a well-known fact.
Or something.
Beyond Electric, Brett and I do a lot of backpacking. Every year we go and we spend a week or 10 days in the Sierra Nevadas of California with nothing but our backpacks. And it's something we do with our family, and it's one of our favorite activities. And when you're up at 10 or 11,000 feet and there is not a sound to be heard, you are as far away from electricity as you can imagine. And the song itself was inspired by being in the mountains beyond electric dreams. And that's really what the song talks about. I wish it was more deep for you, but I appreciate your
question. Well, there's a lyric about raptors and just, I don't know, it just seems really weird. Did you guys just like really... I don't know.
I'm glad it helped you with your SAT. That's great. Thank you.
We have one final question for you. Would you be willing to do another song for us, possibly from your solo album?
I will, but if you will indulge me.
Does everyone want it?
All right, one more. That was almost like a setup, wasn't it? You don't know how much pressure this is to try and... I really thought I can answer questions all night, but doing songs is difficult. All right, this is off of Cold as the Clay. Is that what you wanted? Something off there. All right. I can do that. One of my favorite songs, actually, was never recorded by Bad Religion, but that's because it was really meant to be on my old-timey album. And this one is called The Highway. Tired old man, you're wasting slowly, battling gray and blue. Built your empire like a shell so nobody preys on you. Remember when you were fresh and bitter like a blossom in his bud. Struggle to keep the memories free from the sweat and blood. Just to generalize, you sleep in your eyes, you fail to recognize. Like the Red Queen, you're running out of steam every mile. The highway of denial. Mm-hmm. What a funny way to spend the day, like a farmer deep in debt, tending to the common harvest, ever trying to forget. Don't you feel like you want to run away from the mess that you've begun? Now that they won't let you make it up as you go along. Just to generalize, you sleep in your eyes, you fail to recognize. Like the Red Queen, you're running out of steam every mile. The highway of denial. Funny old man, you're wasting slowly, battling gray and blue. Built your empire like a shell so nobody preys on you.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Greg Graffin, everyone.
Thanks a lot. That's it. Bye-bye.
You were listening to Greg Graffin, Bad Religion lead singer and evolutionary biologist, accepting his Humanist Lifetime Achievement Award last April at Harvard University. For more information on humanism and the humanists, you can visit the Institute of Humanist Studies, based in Albany, New York, at humaniststudies.org. They have an excellent podcast available there that I encourage you to take a listen to. And this and all previous episodes of Unwelcome Guests are archived at unwelcomeguests.org. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Thank you for listening.
Alright, and you're running makes my guns talk best. But the rangers and deputies are hired by the rich man to catch me and hang me, my shiny black vest. Catch me napping one day and they'll kill me. Then I'll be gone, but that won't be my end. For my guns and my saddle will always be filled by